Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Joining me on the line is Sheil Ben Ephraim, the host of the History of the Land of Israel podcast and Israel Explained YouTube channel. Sheil, thanks so much for joining us here on the Morning Mayhem. Why are Yom HaZikaron, which we're commemorating today, and Yom HaAtzmaut, that we will commemorate from tonight and tomorrow, why are these 2 days so important in forging Israel's national identity?
Yeah, thank you. That's a very good question. Israel has a stronger connection between its society and military than just about any other country I can think of. And it's not in the sense of society being militarized as much as it's in the sense of the country, of the military being socialized, not in the sense of socialism, but in the sense of society penetrating the military. You know, people treat the soldiers as their children. They'll buy them falafel at the stand. Mothers can complain to commanders about unfair guard duty and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of that in Israeli society. And that's also why when there's hostages, it's such a big deal to Israelis, especially when they're soldiers. They feel like these are our children. We need to protect them. Sometimes Israelis think they need to protect the soldiers even more than the civilians. And so the reason that matters is because Israelis can't conceive of celebrating their independence without also remembering those that fell in combat to make that happen. You know, it started off really to commemorate the 1948 war, because that was the war, that was the only major war that had been fought when this tradition started. And then later on, started to incorporate all the soldiers that, you know, in the Israeli narrative, kept Israel safe and kept it existing. So they're intertwined. And then also, if you want to get the full picture, you go a few days backwards to Yom HaShoah, to, you know, Holocaust Remembrance Day. And that also is part of the arc. You know, it's another sacrifice. It's another price that Jews paid for not having a state. Then the soldiers made it possible with their sacrifice. And only once you realize all the pain that went into it, do you celebrate independence. It's a very dramatic way of understanding Zionism and Israel, but it gives you a sort of an insight into the culture.
I definitely understand what you're saying. If we just think back, and now it seems a million years ago with Gilad Shalit, who was taken hostage. At that time, it was one soldier. And at the time when I was living in Israel, the country was so united. And the thinking was, we gave our son to the army. And that's why it was so important for the army to bring our son back home. And I remember at the time people saying, why so much attention on one soldier? And that was exactly the thinking. Now, however, it almost seems obscene to talk about one soldier in the light of what's happened. But I want to ask you something about Yom HaAtzmaut, which we will be celebrating tomorrow. Do you think that Yom HaAtzmaut is more about fostering hope for peace? Or is it about entrenching, I don't know if that's the right word, but entrenching a mindset that prioritizes security over negotiations or over any other concerns?
You know, I don't know if I would read either into Yom HaAtzmaut. I've certainly never seen any link between Yom HaAtzmaut and peace. Not in a bad way, not in the sense that it's like a warmongering holiday. But I've never seen that association early on in Israeli history. And when I say early on, I mean the first 20, 25 years. There used to be a military parade on Yom HaAtzmaut, which made it definitely seem more like related to military conquest and security. But I have to say that Israel made a concentrated effort to remove that element from Yom HaAtzmaut, especially when Israel made peace with Egypt. And from when Israel made peace with Egypt through the Oslo process and beyond, to some, for a few years at least, there was a mindset in Israel that Israel's pursuing peace. So they didn't want anything to be too militarized. They didn't want anything to be too much like that. So there was still a flyover, but they no longer had a military parade. What I associate Yom HaAtzmaut with as an Israeli more than anything else is having fun with your friends, barbecuing, going out. They had these frizzy cans we spray on each other. We hit each other in the head with hammers at night. There's all these weird, fun celebrations. When I was a kid, we had one channel. Yeah, I'm dating myself. And they would show,
I remember, I'm dating myself too.
they would show fun Hollywood movies all day, which they didn't usually show, because they knew that's what people really wanted to watch. So I remember watching Superman, watching Batman on Yom HaTzmaut. It's really about fun. That once you've gone through all the commemoration and all that, you have to stand in all those, you have to stand in those tefillot, the sirens for the Yom HaZikaron, for Yom HaShoah. Once you get to Yom HaTzmaut, you're really over all that. You don't want to think about wars. You don't want to think about killing anyone. You don't want to think about anyone killing you. You just want to have fun. It's a really fun day. I've
She'll
heard that this year and last year it was a it, people aren't thinking that it'll be much fun. But I hope that they do, because they deserve it.
And psychologically, I think it's very, very important. I want to change or move the conversation to polls that show declining Israeli support for a two-state solution. Now, back in 2023, so I'm talking 2 years ago, only 35% of Israelis believed in peaceful coexistence, and that is before the war with Gaza. Today, after the war with Gaza, after the hostages, after everything that's happened, do Israelis on a whole still believe in a two-state?
No, I would say they truly don't. That's not new. There's been the Israeli acceptance of a two-state solution was never that wide. There was a majority at certain points. It was never a large majority. And it's dwindled since the Second Intifada.
So
I don't think
what's
it's
the
ever been a, yeah.
alternative? Are we talking about a one state reality? And if that's the alternative, can you just unpack for us what that actually means?
Yeah, this is a very difficult subject to tackle. So, there's been a status quo for a long time where Israel has governed the West Bank and Gaza sort of indirectly, first through the PA and Gaza and the West Bank, then also through Hamas while governing the ways in and the ways out. That has kind of That was seen as increasingly untenable, and now it seems very untenable. A, because there was the October 7th coming in from Gaza, and people don't want that to happen again, obviously. But also because in the West Bank, the PA isn't able to govern properly. So there's a sense that that's not tenable. The Trump plan, which he's kind of forgotten about, was embraced enthusiastically by the government and by a lot of the members of the public, the majority, actually. So the Israeli government has actually taken steps to move towards pushing the people in Gaza out. And there's also some steps towards pushing the people in the West Bank out. And I think really what we're starting to see is Israelis thinking about how to make sure that there's fewer Palestinians in the long term so that Israel can take over Gaza and the West Bank. I'm just hearing that more and more. There's a disagreement on how to do that, what percentage needs to leave, how much violence to use, how many incentives to use. But I'm just hearing a lot of that talk. People feel like two-state solution is not viable, and that the status quo, which is basically a one-state solution, just with to use a word from your country, I'm sorry, Bantustans for Palestinians, that hasn't proven tenable either. So we're moving towards that, and Palestinians are leaving. Thousands of Palestinians have already left. There's not much publicity around it, and the plan is to get more out. The Mossad is negotiating with Indonesia, with Somaliland, a few other places, Mauritania, to take in Palestinians. And some countries are Western countries are taking them in too. So
Shil,
that's what Israel's thinking right now.
we have 30 seconds left, which is always the problem with these interviews, but one last quick question. As we all know, Yom HaAtzmaut commemorates Israel's independence, but of course it's a day contested by Palestinians who mark it as the Nakba, the destruction. How does this duality shape Israel's national narrative?
Israelis ignore the Nakba narrative. They really do. They're aware of it. They don't like it. There's a minority that accepts it, very small. Most of them don't really care about it. Israel has never grappled with that narrative. They just reject it. They say it's bullshit, or they say that it's, you know, things happen in war. Things happen in war, what are you going to do? Israel hasn't really grappled with the Nakba. It doesn't really have a full alternative to it, and it's not really taught in schools. So it's just kind of ignored. For the Arabs, there's a real duality there. For the Arabs, it's a very sad day. They even Arabs who like Israel find it very hard to celebrate Yom HaAtzmaut. For Jews, there's no contradiction. There's no problem there.
Ashiel Ben Ephraim, what a pleasure talking to you. Ashiel Ben Ephraim, the host of the History of the Land of Israel podcast and Israel Explained YouTube channel. Thanks so much for joining us, especially so early in the morning. We appreciate your insight.